Hey everybody, welcome to the Cripescast. I'm your host, Charlie Behrens. Today my guest is Wisconsin DNR Secretary Preston Cole. Secretary Cole is a farm kid from Southeast Michigan. He's an FFA kid, as he says. He is the first African American to graduate with a timber management degree from the University of Missouri. He worked as a park superintendent for the city of St. Louis, a forester for the city of Milwaukee, and now he is heading the DNR. He's also one of those rare political figures that has worked under both Democrat and Republican administrations. He started off under Jim Doyle, worked under Scott Walker, and now he's under Tony Evers' administration. Now, I really enjoyed talking to Secretary Cole because, you know, as many of you know, I'm a big environmentalist, and I just think there are a ton of environmental issues facing Wisconsin right now that, you know, honestly, I just don't think a lot of people are talking about. PFAS is one of those issues. And it's also one of those issues that both Democrats and Republicans, I think, can unite on. Actually, Representative Gallagher was on the Cripescast about a couple months back, and he was talking about PFAS. Now, for those of you who don't know, PFAS and a similar chemical, PFOS, they're these forever chemicals. They don't break down, and they've been linked to cancer and reproductive issues. They're in everything too, from like Teflon pans to clothes to firefighting foams. And now, unfortunately, they're also in our water. And the problem with these chemicals is they don't break down. Again, they're forever chemicals. And instead of breaking down, they just accumulate in our environment and then in our bodies. And right now, some of us in Wisconsin may be drinking water contaminated with PFAS or eating fish that are contaminated with PFAS. We could be eating food from soil contaminated with PFAS, and we don't even know it. The DNR is currently testing to see the extent of the contamination in Wisconsin, but they're running up against issues from lobbyist groups like the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. They have filed a lawsuit against the agency for testing wastewater for PFAS and requiring businesses to investigate the chemicals in environmental cleanup programs. Now, the WMC and the DNR, WMC again, that's Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, they reached an agreement where the DNR can test wastewater at municipal and industrial facilities, but they can't release the results to the public until a judge orders whether the state can test for chemicals. Now, I think this is really important. So to put it in other words, the DNR can test for these chemicals that are linked to cancer that many of us are ingesting, but Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce is preventing us, the public, from knowing those results, from knowing where these chemicals are being found. Now, folks, in the words of my grandpa Bob, that is just one of the most ass-backwards son-of-a-bitch things I've ever seen. Jeez Louise. Now, I called Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce for a comment on this. Checking my phone, still have not heard back, I guess, at the time of this podcast publication. But I recommend all of you call them as well and call your lawmakers if you think this is something that is important to you. And again, I think this is one of those issues that Democrats and Republicans can unite on. You know, it's bad enough that these chemicals are out there, but they are out there. But the fact that we can't know where they are because of some lobbyists, that, you know, that just sounds like, what's a good way to say that? It sounds like bullshit, actually. I searched for another word, but just, you know, and sorry if kids are listening, but kids, if you have to know what bullshit is, it is this. So you better learn it young. All right, more on this issue and a bunch of other issues coming up in my interview with Preston Cole. But first, I want to thank all of you for following the Cripescast on social media. That's at Cripescast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I also appreciate all of you rating the podcast and leaving comments. Here, I'll read one of those sums of guns right now. Okay, here's a comment. Uh-oh, I was disappointed. Oh, geez Louise, what happened? They put 5 stars, so maybe this is a misdirect. This is by Ope. Let me squeeze right by you there. I followed the Cripescast thinking it was going to be a podcast based off Charlie Behrens' alter ego and was disappointed that it wasn't at first. After the first episode, I was hooked. 3 exclamation points. Jeez Louise, you know they mean business. Charlie is a talented interviewer. Oh, thank you. That's real nice of you. And does his homework on his guests. I have learned a lot about the Midwest and the people who love it. Oh, Cripes, thanks for that review. And thanks to all of you who have left reviews and rated the podcast. Again, that helps immensely. Also, in this interview, you'll hear me and Secretary Cole discuss a number of organizations that help those who don't often get to go out fishing or get out into the outdoors. And we want to support those organizations here at the Cripescast. So what we did, if you go to cripescast.com, we got Grandpa Bob's Tackle Box under the merch section. You buy that, a portion of the proceeds are going to some of these organizations we discuss in this interview with Secretary Cole. So there you go. And you get a bunch of lures. Folks, they got incredible phrases. They says, keep her moving and ulp and tell your folks I says hi and cripes all Friday. And of course, go Packers. And you know what, the Bears. Starts with an F, rhymes with duck. So you got that going for you. So anyway, Grandpa Bob's Tackle Box on cripescast.com. Check it out real quick once. And alrighty, now it is time for my interview with Secretary Cole. How are you doing?
I am doing absolutely wonderfully.
Yeah.
You know, it's my honor. I got the guy who created the Manitowoc Minute. You gotta have a Milwaukee minute, you know.
We do. We do have to get that.
And you know, all over the state. So you're pretty popular in our neck of the woods, quite frankly.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Thanks for saying that. What have you been up to for fun these days? That's a good lead-in question, you know. What have you been doing for fun?
Tomorrow I'm going to join the governor in the fishing opener.
Oh, nice.
In Hayward, Wisconsin. So I will be there with many of our partners out breaking some bread and having some fun on the water.
Okay, cool. So fishing opener, what are you going for? What's your technique here?
You know, the water's going to be absolutely cold, and when it's cold, they're not moving. And mm-hmm. So I think I plan on, you know, anytime I can get a walleye on the line, I'm happy. Panfish as well. I'm not going to be doing the fish of 1,000 casts, which is musky. I don't want to wear my arm out.
What's your favorite walleye technique?
Throw it in the water and pray like hell.
That's good.
I won a partners event two years ago. Uh-huh. And got a 27-inch northern. So that was the winner for the day.
Nice. So, nice. Yeah. Did you keep the northern? Did you let it go to grow to 36 inches?
Oh, I let it go.
Okay.
But it was enough to put me in the record books up there. And, you know, with our all the nations were there. It's their event. And we participate and break bread together and see common ground on natural resource management and fish at the same time. So
that's wonderful. Now in Wisconsin, we obviously have a complicated history as it relates to our indigenous brothers and sisters. How do you navigate that this day and age? Have you seen those relations become stronger? Do you still see some fracture points there?
Well, I would say yes and yes. Our approach is nothing but respect. Mm-hmm. These are sovereign nations. And as sovereign nations, they deserve all of our respect. While at the same time, we do get feedback, whether it's from our law enforcement or area law enforcement in the North Woods, that there can be drama associated with their rights to harvest fish. And so their spearing season is close to the end. But we are, you know, in a process of making sure that it's safety first, educating people about this is the rights of the tribes and reminding folks that, you know, we're all in this game together. You know, they'll harvest, you know, 25 to 35,000 fish when there's millions of fish in the lakes in the North Woods. So I think that they deserve our respect again as a sovereign nation. And I think they do one hell of a job of managing their own lands as it relates to natural resource management. So we could learn a thing or two because it is part of who they are. It's not what they do. It's just who they are in terms of holding natural resources sacred for them.
Absolutely. And the tribes have been doing it a lot longer than, you know, the rest of us have. So
several millennium, I would say.
Yes. You've been in this job a couple years now. Have you found it to be more difficult or less difficult than you imagined?
Well, as secretary, there are challenging times. There's times in which we have to go on offense, which I really love, which means that, you know, like this last year during the pandemic, we were on offense as it relates to outdoor recreation. I mean, we got slammed at our state parks, happily slammed, and it resulted in a 42% increase in our annual stickers, you know, women drove the numbers up in terms of deer hunting, up 12%. My largest group were young women. And, you know, the outdoors continues to be a wonderful place for us to navigate and be in during the pandemic. So for me, as part of my job, that was very, very sexy and honorable, happy, and that everybody got out, that we had a place for them to go. And that's part and parcel to our stewardship program. You know, the funding that we've put in front of the joint finance, another 10-year authorization at $70 million. And this is our opportunity to provide the patchwork of properties around the state where people can get out in. We're happy about that. Yes, it can be challenging at times, but I got to tell you, best job I ever have. This is the job number one. I have a great staff. They love what they do. They practice service excellence, which is, you know, everything speaks. If there's a service fail, let's fix it. But remind folks that we're here to serve. And so I have 3,000 people that work for the DNR that do that every day.
Being in the position you're in, it's often very politicized, the DNR is, but you have worked for both Democrat and Republican administrations, and you've navigated that, and you're now the, you know, secretary of the DNR. And so how are you able to navigate Democrat and Republican administrations the way you have?
I lean in heavily on service. Mm-hmm. So folks who are elected to the legislature were elected by the people within those districts. And I make no bones about it. I'm here to serve each and every one of them, no matter if they have a R behind their name or a D or an I or Lyndon LaRouche party, Green party, it really doesn't matter. Our responsibility is service, and we lead with that. We make no judgments about their political attributes or their stance in certain types of, and quite frankly, we're often advisors to them on a myriad of natural resource issues. So they trust us to give them the information that they need to make, whether it's legislative improvements, to answer citizen questions, to evolve programs and the like. And it's been my history. The more you do that, the more that you can serve others, specifically those who are in elected office. There's no muss or fuss in terms of them challenging us that, you know, because of their political persuasion, we're going to make some type of, you know, change in our game. It just doesn't happen. I think that, my employees, myself, service excellence is what we lean in on. And, you know, we won't tolerate folks who have a agenda in our workforce. We got work to do. We got to work for the people. The people want us to work for them.
Absolutely. And what would you say are the biggest challenges facing Wisconsin right now, whether you're Democrat or Republican? From an environmental standpoint,
we have been mired in far too long these clean water issues, whether it's PFAS or lead service lines in our cities. I mean, there are 110 cities across the state that still have lead service lines in them. And I heard the president talk about some of his goals and maybe some possible funding down the line to get those lead service lines out of the ground once and for all, in creating jobs while at the same time. So we're certainly in lockstep if that comes to fruition. PFAS is quite the challenge. And these are forever chemicals that wind up in our fat cells. They create a myriad of challenges regarding the human genome. And so it causes cancer, quite frankly. And I remember a year and a half ago, the Attorney General and I were in Marinette listening to folks and about PFAS in their drinking water. And time again, people were coming to the microphone. If they weren't crying about having lost loved ones over the years through testicular cancer and throat cancer and many different types of cancer, they were just upset and they wanted action. And so our latest is French Island on the western side of the state out in by La Crosse. And they too now have about 200 wells that have PFAS in it. And can you imagine not knowing, and you've been drinking that water for quite some time? You got to be afraid to death. You got to be afraid for your family. You got to be afraid for yourself. And so we did the requisite work of working with the Air National Guard and our Department of Health Services and started implementing bottled water and big tanks of water that they can draw from until we can get those sites cleaned up. So water continues to be a legacy issue. But I will tell you, Tyler, we've cleaned these processes up 138 times. We have a groundwater law that in statute, you know, you don't see PCBs on the landscape, toluene, atrazine, all of these things that do harm for us. We've taken them off the landscape and we've moved on. And the plan, if allowed through our budget effort, that we've moved forward $20 million lift to find out where this chemical is. That's the first thing that we have to do. Where is it? Where is it in the drinking water? Where is it in the groundwater? And where is it in terms of sewer treatment plants? And once we figure out where it is, then we can work on strategies to mitigate that. But the first thing that we have to do is find it.
I think PFAS is a really interesting microcosm for the struggle between the environment and the economy. And we see this all the time, whether it's climate change, whether it's, you know, farming to a certain degree. But, you know, protecting the environment is protecting the economy. And I think as soon as that sinks in, and I really applaud you because I feel like in every interview, you kind of, you make that connection. I don't know if you do that on purpose or not, but it seems like it. But I just read this article report PFAS treatment for contaminated well could cost $733,000 a year. That's one well in Madison. I mean, and extrapolate that across the state. So PFAS is something that's in everything too. I mean, it's probably in the clothes we're wearing to a certain degree. And where did PFAS come from? What company made that? And what was its initial purpose? I think just to give people an understanding of where this came from.
Yeah, I don't have a list of names because there's many different manufacturers, depending on the use. There are manufacturers for PFAS, for firefighting foam. And the firefighting foam is important because when plans, you know, get wrecked, and there's a fire, PFAS does an awesome job of smothering that flame and putting that fire out, thus saving lives. But as mankind, you find out that there's a chemical that you can add to fabrics that reduces the viscosity. It makes it really slick. You know, Teflon pans, Scotchgard. I used Scotchgard for the first time last year to put on my new outdoor furniture. And of course, it has PFAS in it, but it's never listed on the label because there's less than 2%. And so, of course, it does what it's supposed to do. It propels water.
Okay.
Now, and so this was created back in the 70s, I believe a company out on the East Coast. And it just, there are probably in this classification of PFAS and PFOAs, probably around 7,000 different chemicals within those groups. With many different types of attributes and how they're being used in manufacturing today. You know, if you got a raincoat that has, you know, water repelling fabric on it, it's probably got PFAS on it. The ingestion of this stuff, everything from our food wrappers to the water in which we drink, just does a significant amount of harm. And I don't think manufacturers, you know, start the manufacturing process saying, let's see how we can hurt people. Actually, what they're trying to do in the chemical council, what they try to do is try to do something that makes mankind better. But now we know. So now we got to fix it. And now we got to clean it up and move on. And as I said before, there's a number of chemicals that we've taken off the landscape. And our goal is to get this one off the landscape as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, is it dangerous just being on your clothes, or is it when it gets in, like, how does it get into the environment from being on our clothes or being in these firefighting materials?
Yeah, both for firefighters that are using this stuff, coming close proximity to it. Ingestion is the most dire circumstance, whether it is from water or whether it is a Teflon pan. I remember in college when we got our first Teflon pans, you know, after 2 or 3 years, they're all chipped up. Had we known, right, we would have got a new one.
Right.
And so that ingestion of those chemicals can do harm over a long period of time.
Yeah.
And you just don't get, you don't pick it up. If a person dies from cancer, who knows where it came from, especially if you have a person who is a smoker and also was a firefighter, because they test with foam all the time. They test that foam during their drills. And these are military installations as well as, you know, airports across the country that test with this so that they know that they're prepared for if something should happen to a plane. They got the right material. Luckily, we understand that these same manufacturers are creating a new type of PFAS that doesn't necessarily that they're in their research phase, it doesn't necessarily do us harm. So mm-hmm. we're excited if that comes to pass.
Right, because you make the great point that we do need this to, from everything from fighting fires to staying warm when we're out in the out hiking around or hunting or whatever. If you get wet and you get cold, that can be a life and death scenario too. So it does have a lot of benefits. So what is the process of cleaning up the water then? It seems kind of mind-boggling of a thing to do if it's in the rivers, if it's in the lakes. How do you go about cleaning that water?
Yeah, as I mentioned before, the process is to find where it is. And then there are mitigating circumstances. And those circumstances to mitigate where it is, whether it's in the surface water, ponds, lakes, rivers, whether it's in the groundwater, whether it's in drinking water, are all different types of techniques. It could be anything from carbon filtration to technology around filters, membranes. There are a couple of researchers in Wisconsin that are working on coming up with a way to put membranes in place and stop PFAS from moving through these membranes in water systems and water supply systems. And if that winds up proving out, then those are the techniques. Well, in groundwater and surface water, the same types of techniques. Now, can you put something in a lake to settle out PFAS? That's going to be quite the challenge. If it's in the ground, we know that in the Madison area, we know we have PFAS in the soil. That soil is going to have to get dug up and taken to a special facility, and then that facility will then deal with it. And then we look for the testing of before, during, and after. So when we have levels after that soil's been taken out, new soil has been put in, then building can continue because those levels tend to be so low that they don't get in the way of hurting humans at that point. So it depends on where it is. It's a type of ways to get it out. But drinking water seems to be the place where, and in firefighting locations where it's in the soil from testing. And so it gets flushed down the sewer pipe. The sewer pipe goes to the sewage treatment plant, and then that sewage treatment plant creates these biosolids. Those five biosolids and Marinette were then land applied, and that's what most people do with them. I mean, if you can land apply it because it's an organic material, it's like Milorganite in Wisconsin.
Right.
So once you land apply it and it has PFAS in it, now you've just exacerbated the problem that now it's in the soil. That soil, once it rains, it's going to leach into the groundwater. And for folks who have wells, that's a problem.
Mm-hmm. And you have wanted to build up the testing and everything of water and land, wastewater as well. But the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, they sued the DNR to block you from collecting and analyzing wastewater and getting those samples and everything. And then you came to an agreement. So can you explain that whole process, why they were suing?
Given the fact that that case is still being heard, the agreement is that we don't give out the list of places that we've tested and what those properties tested at. And so we're still in court. And so I can't go into very much detail other than telling you that that's the circumstance that we find ourselves in.
Okay, because as it stands right now, we basically have, I'll just read it just so I get it. The DNR reached an agreement with the WMC, the state's largest business group, which allows the department to continue sampling water from industrial and municipal treatment plants for the chemicals as long as it doesn't release those results to the public. So
correct.
When will the public be able to see those results?
That will be up to a judge.
Okay. So basically this is sort of a bridge type thing where you're like, all right, well, we're going to keep doing our work and then eventually let the courts, hopefully let the, because I feel like the public, it's a no brainer that the public should know, you know, I mean, these are the chemicals that the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, I mean, you brought these chemicals here, at least let us know where they are. Isn't that just a very common sense thing?
Charlie, I can't say it any better.
Okay.
For us, you know, people have the right to sue us anytime they want to. And we just think that people who care about this are going to have eyes all over it for sure. And you make a very commonsensical argument, which is, shouldn't people know? And there are those who believe that the public should know. But we'll wait for the judge to render a decision.
Right. I mean, hopefully that goes the right way. But I think anyone listening could even reach out to the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce and just let them know how they feel about this. Because at the end of the day, you know, this just can't be the truth. I think at the end of the day, and total transparency is, I know that's a big thing for you. I mean, that's got to be paramount. Otherwise, we're blindly drinking water that we don't know what's in it. And I, as you said, cancer, it's crazy the amount of damage this chemical can do. And so just full transparency would be preferred by everybody. I think we understand it's a problem and what to do about it. So anyway,
in five miles around Marinette, the Department of Health Service issued a advisory on eating deer liver. Mm-hmm. And that circumstance was for, I didn't know people ate deer liver, but they do eat deer liver. And so it was found that, you know, in deer liver, this chemical bioaccumulates. And so they put that advisory out. And so now you can see the economic impact on deer hunting. You know, can I eat, you know, if you were worried about CWD, now you got to worry about PFAS. Come on, how many things can you get hit with at the same time? And so we too worry about, you know, how this chemical gets into the human body. But know this, there are tons of people that are working on it, and we're happy that they're working on it. Our hope is, fingers crossed, that we'll have some news here in short order.
Well, truly, truly appreciate your work on that. And I want to switch topics to another thing that you've really been spearheading, but that's bringing in more diversity, equality, and inclusion into the DNR and just outdoor activities in general. I've been watching the TikTok. I think it does a great job of just incorporating different voices into the outdoors in Wisconsin. They're very funny. So that social media push is great. But how are you specifically going about bringing diversity and equality and inclusion into sort of the day in and day out of Wisconsin outdoor activities?
Lots of strategies. Of course, if you can see it, you can be it. So for young children, it's almost as if the slate is clean as to seeing people of color in the outdoors. And if you don't see people who look like you, is it something that you would want to do as a career or a place you would want to go? And of course, this country has a horrible history of Black folks venturing into the outdoors, specifically, you know, in the 1800s, 1900s, where bad things were happening to people of color. Mm. That said, we are certainly up against how we can get more people into the outdoors. And the way we're doing that is to tell their stories. So if you go to the Fish and Wildlife Service's homepage, they have a picture of a African-American conservation crew who helped build all of the refugees, the wildlife refugees that ducks and geese get into in this country. And so once we're able then to tell that story, you know, we know more that people can see themselves, be in the outdoors. And there is a litany of people around the country, you know, Professor Lanham in South Carolina at Clemson, you know, telling this story about Black birders and getting into the outdoors. And the other thing that we have to worry about is people of color, Black and brown people, don't have a connection to the outdoors or to conservation and have that conservation gene. In 50 years from now, will these refugees and the importance of natural resource management and conservation and wildlife and parks be a high priority if they haven't entered into the outdoors? So with Sarah and her team on social media, we are trying to link our bus up to new organizations, you know, Outdoor Afro, Melanin in Motion, Black Skiers Association. And these are all Hispanic and people of color organizations that get into the outdoors and tell their story on social media. And so our responsibility in terms of getting people into our parks, wildlife areas, because they're paying for them, and we are hell bent on making sure that people from our cities, towns, and villages get to those locations. Now, when it comes to the workforce in terms of the diversity, equity, inclusion, it's about hiring the right people. I mean, we hire, you know, architects and engineers and project managers. You know, I'm a forester by training and wildlife managers and fisheries biologists. Well, we have to go where they are. So when you look at historical Black colleges they're all land-grant universities that were created in the late 1800s because Black folks could not go to the traditional colleges and universities. Being land-grant universities, they're all agricultural-based. So Southern University in Baton Rouge has an urban forestry program with two different tracks. And I've hired those kids when I worked in Milwaukee. Alabama A&M has a robust program in terms of environmental management. These are the people who work on PFAS-related stuff. We just have to meet them where they are, and we have to make sure that they can see themselves working for us. And so this summer coming up, we're going to have a fellowship program. So in each of my five regions, we have three kids coming in from colleges and universities and tech schools, whether it's IT, ITI, any of the local colleges. Now, bring them into our workforce, let them feel the culture of the Department of Natural Resources, and can they see themselves working for the DNR? Not just in terms of conservation, but other professions like, doctors, lawyers we hire, project managers, engineers. And we're doing a requisite job, and Sarah, quite frankly, put us in touch with a number of folks that she's worked with in her journalism career out in Maryland. And so we know that our prime proving grounds for bringing people into the Wisconsin DNR is going to be focused on Wisconsinites. It's also going to be focused on young men and women that come out of these historical Black colleges, because that's where the curriculums are. And these are Black kids, Black and brown kids coming out of these universities. Will they make their way to Wisconsin? Well, they got to first come and see us. And so we're working on internships and fellowships and come see us and, move to Wisconsin, so to speak. We believe that we have something to offer in terms of how we go about doing our business. And quite frankly, Wisconsin is a great place to live.
Absolutely, it is. I'll totally agree with you on that. I'll let my character do the talking for that. It's the most fantastic place, this side of the Mississippi or that side. And we got great brats and brandy and cheese curds, the whole nine. Okay, that's the PSA portion of the show. Thank you very much. So are there programs that are in existence that I don't know about, or that you wish were in existence that could get, kids in a place that don't have access to outdoors, getting them to like a lot of the great hikes in Wisconsin, for instance, the Ice Age Trail, but they're a little ways away. You need a car to get there. Are there any programs to kind of bridge that gap between people who can't have access to those areas?
Absolutely. The Joy Chip Project is like James Edward Mills. He is a Black man who leads trips into the outdoors. And this year or last year, he used the Shawamigan Nicolet Forest to take a bunch of Black guys out fishing. And I was talking to him on the cell phone. It was our staff and our fishery staff that put him, what we believe, in the right places to catch a lot of fish. We also have an inner city sportsman council in Milwaukee. And these are folks that we've worked with historically in terms of getting kids into the outdoor, free fishing days, everything from baiting their hooks. And then you just move them along to other types of attributes. They also call the DNR because they don't know a lot of folks in the North Woods when they want to go deer hunting. So they're looking for state land that they can get on to go deer hunt. And so they do make their way all over the state of Wisconsin from Milwaukee and get into the outdoors. We just need more groups like that. And we are hell-bent on creating those relationships. We had some folks who are in the business of moving people around. I mean, if you can get on a bus and go to the casino in Minnesota, if you're in Minnesota, you can spend 2 days there. So we're talking about what types of ways can we get people into the outdoors that help drive our economy as well? Mm-hmm. Because quite frankly, we have a outdoor recreation, nature-based economy in the North Woods. They count on people. The only color there is green, my brother. That's the only color. Yep. And so we're going to be trying to stand up some programming and see what it looks like in the future to get people in the outdoors, of folks who we know that are in the business of moving people around, and have, for example, you want to see, the top 10 waterfalls in the state of Wisconsin, sign up, get on the bus. We'll take you around 2 nights stay, and we'll bring you right back wherever we picked you up from. Or do you want to get into our Shawamigan Nicolet National Forest and begin to see a legacy of forest management that's second to none in this country? And we think we do a good job in terms of force management. There's nothing more compelling when you stand next to, you know, a 50 inch diameter tree that's been there for 100 years and makes you see how small you are. Or some of our world-class fishing that's around the state, our trout fishing, our cold water streams like the Prairie River, all offer opportunities for people to do that simple act of getting the outdoors. We know it settles us down as people and it's recreational, by golly, and it's free for you to do when you got your fishing license. So we're excited about all of this. And Sarah has certainly been involved in that with her background in journalism and making connections all over the place. So we got lucky with Sarah. And so Sarah is paying very close attention along with our forestry, fisheries, and wildlife. And every 2 weeks, it's on my agenda for our meetings. What are we doing? What are we doing on diversity, equity, inclusion? What are we doing on getting people into the outdoors? Because my staff, they want to engage in that. And I thank them for that. They want to lead. They like, you know what, Preston? We have to do this. Mm-hmm. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it, period. And I'm like, I love you guys. Group hug.
The COVID group hug where you're all just going like this, you know?
the virtual
virtual group hug. There it is. Oh, geez Louise, folks, excuse the interruption, but we got to thank our title sponsor, the Jolly Good Soda. It's the best gosh darn soda in Wisconsin. Now you can get it at Festival Foods or Woodman's or Piggly Wiggly or whatever in the heck, okay? They got 6-packs there. Yeah, you betcha. Now, if your store don't got it, you ask to see that manager and you says, hey there, when you gonna get them Jolly Goods in, huh? Geez Louise, say it just like that. They'll know you mean business, okay? Also, they got a diet line. They got caffeine-free, zero calories, zero carbs, zero sugars. Also, it's really good as mixers. I'm just going to say that, especially the sour power in your old fashioned, okay? So, you know, and then follow them on the socials as well, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. That's at Jolly Good Soda. Yeah, real good. Also, folks, let's talk about Duluth Trading Company. Are you sick of clothes holding you back? You know, no, I'm not telling you to go out there and go nude, go in the buck. But, you know, what I am telling you about is that some of you are probably tired of the fashion before function, you know, where it's like, oh, this looks real nice, but it kind of it's tight in the junk, you know, or whatnot. Do you just need a little more can-do in your closet? Okay, well, Duluth Trading Company, they got you covered. They got the ingenuity built into every single product. Jeez Louise. They got this crouch gusset situation that lets you squat. Okay, so if you're trying to do squats, you can do that. If you're trying to pick up like a big old stump or something, you're not going to split your pants right down the middle. You know, I've done that before. That's no fun. Okay, so they got these flexing fabrics that can help you out in a bind. They got underwear. It's real comfortable. And check out that organic line of undies. Jeez Louise, it's organic cotton, real good. So check out Duluth Trading Company for all your clothing needs. Okie dokes, back to the Cripes Cast. What is your story? You're from Michigan, right?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, where in Michigan? Southwestern Michigan, Benton Harbor, St. Joe, mm-hmm. little small community called SOTUS. I'm an FFA kid, so I grew up in rural Michigan, and it kind of defined me. You know, my parents were my first conservationists, and I'm the youngest of 9. And so I had to, you know, manage the family acreage around our garden. It's going to produce green beans for us and tomatoes and yada, yada, yada. So the youngest kid is out there. And, you know, you get these lessons about, you know, mom, I hear about if you can put these chemicals here, this can keep the weeds down. Well, there is that. No, we're not doing that. Mm-hmm. Or how about this? Or how about that? So these natural systems that I've learned over time really came from my parents who were from Mississippi and Texas. And as they made that great journey north, wound up in Chicago, got married, moved to Southwestern Michigan. And again, I grew up looking at Lake Michigan my whole life. And so you begin to see how small you really are when you're on that side of the lake and it's surf, it is sandy, it's warm, and it's beautiful. And then, you know, went to college at the University of Missouri, got a forest management degree, worked as a forester in Missouri. After my graduation, parks superintendent in the city of St. Louis, city forester in the city of Milwaukee. Then I got touch to the mayors, you know, of Milwaukee's like, we want you to be the building code official. Sure. So I got handed $3 billion worth of permits to get across the finish line. And that includes the Fiserv Arena, the NM new 42-story building, and a myriad of other projects, because our guy who was there before left. And I think that what the mayor is looking for is leadership to get things across the finish line. And there was no better honor for me to do that. It didn't matter. As the mayor said, we know how you go about doing your work. We can put you anywhere, Preston. And that's an attribute of the people that I've met, the coaching that I've had, my family, and just an atmosphere of service. You know, it's part of who I am.
Yeah.
Service to others.
Yeah. Absolutely. And you, I want to back up real quick. You're 1 of 9. I'm 1 of 12. So I get that. But you're the youngest, right?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I know your type. Okay. My little sister is, so you're one of them. Okay. I get
the
it.
Baby. He's the baby.
Maybe you said this. I might have missed it, though. What did your folks do over there?
My dad was a welder. My mom was a seamstress and ran a small dry cleaning laundry shop. So that's what she did.
Cool, cool. So, but it was the home garden. That's sort of where you love outdoors kind of came in. And Lake Michigan.
And so in Lake Michigan. But in that part of Michigan, it's relevant for folks to know that it's a non-traditional agriculture, because we produced tart cherries, Concord grapes, peaches, apples, and pears. So it's the fruit belt because of the temperate weather that we have. While we do get lake effect snow, I mean, you can put your toe in the water over there, it's going to be 75 or 80 degrees. On the Milwaukee side, it's going to be 50. And so all those, that warmer water goes to the east. The sand goes to the east. If you've ever been to the, you know, Indiana State Dunes National Seashore, you will see some what I would consider the best behemoth of dunes. And so that agricultural piece for me, I first got paid on sugar content of Concord grapes from Wilderness Foods. And I'm like, I love this. Who knew I was going to get a $79 check as a kid? And we all got paid. But what they do is come out, take the grapes out, put them in a test tube, shake it up, you get paid on the sugar content.
Oh,
so they're going to be producing preserves. So it is literally the fruiting side of Michigan along that shoreline, all the way up to Traverse City, from Benton Harbor all the way up to Traverse City.
That's cool. That's interesting to learn the economics of that at such a young age, too. Like the sugar content. The closest thing I can compare that to, I used to collect cans, and the little tops of the cans had more aluminum than the rest of the cans. So you always have a bag of the pop tops, you know. That's my closest comparison. But that's cool. So that got you in it. And now obviously you're here today. And when you came to the head of the DNR, you said that science is back. And what do you mean by that?
Well, I think that how we go about doing our business is science based. Mm-hmm. Water, agricultural, you name it, how we manage the deer herd, how we manage fish populations, how we manage wildlife, environmental management. Mm-hmm. Those are all science-based related curriculums. Now, there may have been a time in the past where there was no relationship on telling people from the DNR about climate change. Well, if you go to our website now, Sarah has stood up what I would call a robust climate change. While people in the previous administration chose not to talk about it, we have to talk about it. We have to talk about climate change and this existential threat we have, because it's doing too much infrastructure damage, quite frankly, to where Black and brown people live in some of our poorest communities. You know, in 2008, 10, and 12, Milwaukee had the, you know, once in a lifetime storms every other year. Mm. And so our responsibility is to tell that story about what's happening to our ecosystem. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, we do have our trout streams, working with the Wiki Group, the Wisconsin Institute for Climate Change. And they tell us that our coal streams are getting warmer. Now, people come to Wisconsin to fish those streams. You know, as that temperature begins to increase in our cold water streams, then it is no longer an adaptive type of ecosystem for the fish that we have. you know, those browns that we have, the trout that we have in those strings, which means if, I mean, we're the third state, third largest state for outdoor fishing license sales, right? And that's a big deal. People, that's like 330, almost 340,000 licenses that come from doing that work. Well, will people come here when those streams are no longer, you know, bubbling over with trout? We worry about that. We worry about the infrastructure. So climate change has a particular message for us in natural resources because we see it. We see it on the landscape. We see it over time. We're just paying attention to it, and we're going to tell that story and how and why people should pay attention to it. You know, those who are most ill, less adaptive to climate change, again, are some of the poorest folks in the community. Whether you're in rural Wisconsin and that dam just blew out again and now your fields are underwater. I mean, these torrential storms, it is mind-boggling. But if you just look at it at 1 year, it's like, oh, it's a big storm. Mm-hmm. But when you see these temperature increases and you know that we're warming up, what can we do? Well, electric vehicles. Let's make sure that, you know, we pivot towards solar. Solar is now, you remember, it was for a while, solar was like these big TV satellites that your parents would buy and put in your backyard. It's the thing that of the past, back in the 70s, so to speak. Well, now we know that temperatures are increasing. We know that there's better technology, and that technology around the electric vehicle is going to be a game changer for us. And I think what we have to fix is, you know, we can't afford, you know, Elon Musk's, you know, $80,000 a year, you know, electric vehicle. The poorest people need those electric vehicles to get to and from work, you know, and we had always thought, you know, maybe there's another way that we can come at this with electric companies. You know, you help people get electric vehicles, you put the electric outlet in their home, and they can pay for it on their electric bill. And, you know, those connections are just simple ways to think about how we can be more adaptive to, you know, clean energy strategies, you know, stewardship and biodigesters, you know, these clean streets that we should be getting out. I mean, you know, being in public works, you know, all streets in this country are designed to carry 2 inches of water and get rid of 2 inches of water per hour. Well, you know what happens when you get 5 inches of water. Now it's overtopping the sidewalk. It's coming into your basement and so on and so forth. So the engineering community is changing the infrastructure around this. And that's why when you hear the president talk about infrastructure changes, these pipes have to be bigger. Mm. You know, we have to build more resilient types of technology and be more adaptive to, one, letting that water slow down. But two, when it comes at us, do we have the appropriate size infrastructure that Mother Nature is throwing at us? Because now it's too often and too soon. Mm-hmm. And so we know that, you know, everything from charging stations to infrastructure improvements is in play. And we know that this environmental justice piece, you know, the state, the governor is hiring the environmental justice person that works in state government so that we can work with them to make sure that our programs aren't inadvertently creating problems for Black and brown and rural Wisconsinites of modest means in such a way that puts them in harm's way. Mm-hmm. As well.
Yeah. You know, on the issue of climate change, especially in Wisconsin, where, you know, America's dairyland, and it seems like the Biden administration is going after methane. And it seems that the oil and gas industry are signing on to the bill that was just presented. And they are also saying oil and gas is saying it's all methane, all methane, all methane. So methane is a huge contributor to climate change. How do we reconcile that in a way that maintains the heritage of dairy farming in Wisconsin?
Yeah, we know that, you know, ag has skin in the game. My agricultural brothers and sisters have skin in the game. And we know that dairy is a big deal. So we're coming to the table. They're coming to the table to figure out ways for everything from biodigesters. I mean, these animals poop every day, all day, if you know what I mean. And mm-hmm. what are you going to do with it? Some people turn that into dry out and turning into bedding. There's been a lot of stops and starts relative to biodigesters that creates electricity on the other side of that. The engagement piece is to make sure that we can award folks thought leaders, universities, farmers, grants to work on a myriad of different ways to investigate all of the ways that they can come to the table and create systems that make us more resilient to climate change. And we know that, you know, planting trees on unproductive land, you know, the governor's announced his 75 million tree planting initiative by 2030. We know that that's significant because trees do Mother Nature's work. They store carbon and they give off oxygen. Mm-hmm. And the more trees we have in our ecosystem, the better off we are. And then conversely, can we trade those carbon credits in the future? Will the federal government recognize those carbon credits so we can then pay property owners or farmers who have myriad of timberlands, a myriad of lands that are in timber, keep them in timber, because those types of attributes you can still harvest. But those types of attributes are being investigated as we speak now. And we are excited about where it's going.
Yeah, I think that approach is really productive. I mean, you have so many dairy farmers. I'm just picking dairy because they're often the main target for climate change around Wisconsin. But they're, from my experience speaking with them, a lot of them are environmentalists, you know, and they care very deeply. You have Crave Brothers Cheese Company. They invest in one of those methane digesters. They power all of the surrounding homes in that area. I mean, that's a great way. But to just say, no, we have to stop altogether, in my mind, it seems counterproductive. It's almost like, let's develop niches so you can, your business can get cooking and you can invest in these more creative ways. Or as you said, with, you know, 75 million trees being planted, but there's no increase in taxes, you're looking, right, and correct me if I'm wrong, for private entities and other public entities to help you along the way. So is that something farmers could contribute to as well, planting trees on their land?
Absolutely. We can't do this work alone. And we know that, you know, our nursery produces a lot of trees and sells to, you know, county forests, folks who have forested lands and the like. But it's going to be a heavy lift for everybody. And certainly industry, the farming community, the forestry community, and the university systems all have to come together to make sure that we can pull this off over the next 9-10 years. And I'm happy to say that there's a lot of people who understand where we're going with the tree planting, because we do think that that is a part of the economy as well. Somebody has to plant those trees. You got to pay somebody to plant those trees. Mm-hmm. We think there's an economy associated with that. And so whether or not, you know, we know what trees can do to the ecosystem. About energy in agricultural areas, as you mentioned about, you know, the Crave Brothers, you know, these are folks who are stewards of the land. Farmers are stewards of the land. You know, they wake up every day trying to do the best that they can to produce a product so they can take care of their family, while at the same time, they know that their land is important in terms of their livelihood. Thus, they're going to wake up every day trying to create systems that can protect them and their land over time. And in doing so, they provide a great partner. You know, you're talking about families who have 100 years of seeing what's happened on that land. Mm-hmm. They don't need a college degree to tell you what the hell's going on in their property. Mm-hmm. Not at all. And I trust them immensely. You know, as a FFA kid, I know how they're bred. I know how they get up in the morning and, you know, and go to the parlor. Everybody's milking. They're producing bees. They got a livelihood. But sometimes people throw them under the bus. We don't throw our partners under the bus. These are the folks that we work with. And I will continue to defend agriculture in the state of Wisconsin until the day I die.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's a huge part. And as you said, they're very, you know, they know the land, had that farm for 100 years and all that. Is there anything that I didn't bring up that you think is pretty important to mention before we wrap up here?
Well, the NFL draft is.
What's your hope? What's your hope there?
I'm interested to see how this kid from Clemson's going with the long hair.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. And people think that he's going to be a game changer. I think, what does he weigh? 195 pounds, 200 pounds? I don't know if he could be a game changer. He doesn't weigh enough.
I know.
No, I think we've touched on a lot of stuff that is important for your audience. We know you have a huge audience. We're blessed to have this opportunity to visit with you. And I think that, you know, the work that we do at the DNR is engaging, it's purposeful, it's relationship management. We touch a lot of people in this state. No matter what business you're in, we touch a lot of people. We don't take that for granted. And so we look for people to partner with us in ways that we can be adaptive ourselves. Evolution of change about systems. And I'm glad to, you know, serve the certainly the people of the state of Wisconsin and our employees to help move the ball and move the needle on creating a better environment that's based in the economy that we have to protect as well.
Mm-hmm.
Those two things have to go together. It just has to. And so we're hell bent on making sure that our economy continues to rev around outdoor recreation. We're excited about what that prevails, but we want to take that next level and get people of color that don't have the time, energy, or effort or the means to get into the outdoors. And our stewardship program that I think the governor moved on 10 million, 10 years, 70 million. We know we have a SCORP report. That outdoor recreation report tells us urbanites are not going to travel more than 2 hours away from their home to be into the outdoors. Now we got to spin some of this around and be able to create and purchase properties nearer to our urban areas. They may cost a little more, but we know the benefit of folks who don't have the means or the access to travel more than 2 hours or don't want to travel more than 2 hours. And again, these folks paying taxes in the state of Wisconsin, they're working in Wisconsin. We should make sure that they, too, are part of our outdoor natural resource based economy. And we have places for them that they can show up, stick their toe in the water, see a sunrise, see a sunset, catch a fish, you know, and hunt and fish like this economy needs them to do.
Absolutely. And finally, on that note, to a degree, what is your advice for, and we'll make it specific to a young person of color who wants to get into your line of work?
Call me, email me, preston.cole@wisconsin.gov. We can have a conversation. I talked to a young kid earlier this week. Yeah. Mixed race kid coming out of the School of Forestry, Fisheries and Wildlife at Missouri. And he's asking me all these questions. What do I do next? How do I determine? And he plans on getting not one, but two PhDs. I'm like, oh, you're going to be science-based, I see. And
yeah.
And let's see where that leads you. I said, we're hiring. And so if you want to come and work an internship for us and get some of that legwork in, the door is always open. And that's the thing is to make, I have to make sure I'm accessible to young men and women of color so I can tell them how I got started. And there's some connections that you make. And so those connections are going to be had when we're inviting these fellowship students in this summer. And when we start doing more of our recruitment from the historical Black colleges and universities. And, you know, our hope is to make those connections for youngsters that get so energized about the outdoors and natural resource management and science that it's a no-brainer for them to show up in the state of Wisconsin and to stay in Wisconsin, quite frankly, if they're born here.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for your work, sir. I appreciate it. And go Packers. Hopefully we can get some in this draft.
I appreciate that. I'm going to need you on these five phases of spring cleaning. You know, my wife has got me. Dude, I saw that on your website. Yeah. I'm like, somebody's got to help me on this because I am working way too hard at this. You know,
do you have a junk drawer somewhere in your place? That's where you start?
Several.
Okay. Don't start with the junk drawer. It's an endless hole and you need everything in there. So
I didn't even know the dishwasher had a thing that you could filter that you can take out and clean.
Oh, I didn't know that either. That's news to me right now.
That's a thing.
I can't even look inside mine. I've never changed that. Yeah.
And of course, then when you move the refrigerator.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Bring out the broom. You might find some cool stuff under there, though.
I thought you had the magic potion that I could use in terms of those phases of spring cleaning. So
no,
we'll keep this conversation going.
Yeah, we will. We will. Absolutely. All right. Thank you again.
Thank you, my brother.
All right.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
You bet.
And that is it for this week's episode of the Cripes Cast. Make sure you follow the DNR on Instagram. That's WY_DNR. You can follow the Cripes Cast on all social media platforms. That's @CripesCast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Don't forget to rate the podcast, leave a comment, and check out CripesCast.com if you want that Grandpa Bob's tackle box, ladies and gentlemen. All right, thank you all. Hey, keep her moving. And while you keep her moving, you watch out for deer. Okie dokes. Bye-bye.
So roll out. Life's got you down, just keep her moving. It's on Wisconsin, the Badgers say it's the old Wisconsin Jubilee.
You know, sometimes when you're ice fishing, you put your foot into walleye hole and go ass over tea kettle and you think you're done. No, you gotta keep her moving.